from stpetecatalyst.com.
Welcome to Political Party with Adam Smith. We are very lucky to have Ashley Walker, who is objectively, and I'm not just saying this because she's my colleague and boss, she is objectively the most important Democratic operative in Florida, the person that Obama has turned to twice, that Tom Steyer has turned to this year to help with, what is it, 7 battleground states for 4 future?
Yes.
Which states are those? Remind me.
We are in Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nevada.
And I saw Virginia, and then I was thinking...
And Ohio.
Why Virginia? Like, Virginia is now a comfortable blue state, right?
Well, the 4 our future states were determined back in 2016 with an eye on 2020. And, Virginia is an important state. Over the last 4 years, it has definitely trended blue. But they have off-year elections too. And so there's a lot of state ledge and local state races that happen in the off-year. And so we always run program there in the off-year. And we organize in places where we are going to stay and have a continuous existence rather than kind of parachuting in just for an election. We like to have continuous boots on the ground and folks organizing in communities because it helps us develop a more lasting and meaningful relationship with voters.
So I'm Florida fixated, as are you most of the time. I know you're looking nationally, but as I look, we're not going to get too specific because this will be a little dated. But when I look at the trend and the way the Republicans are cutting into the Democratic advantage from mail-in votes, I, as a Biden supporter, worry that the trend looks good for Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this cycle a little differently than I have looked at last cycles. Usually the best way to tell voter behavior is to look at past behavior. And I think that this cycle, it's totally turned on its head with the emphasis on vote by mail due to the pandemic, with the president telling Republicans you can't trust vote by mail, which in Florida, they have always dominated vote by mail. So it's totally turned things on a head. And so what you're seeing is more Democrats casting votes early, especially by mail. And you're seeing Republicans turn out in early voting and in person, which is totally upside down from the way that the trends have been in the past. And so I am cautiously optimistic nationally about Biden's chances, but I always caution folks in Florida, everything's close. It's so close all the time. And I just don't think either side can get too comfortable right now because, it's just hard to say where this is going to go because all the rules that experts like you and I have looked at in the past just are turned upside down this cycle.
So, and you look at how much both sides are campaigning in Florida in the final days, you can tell nobody's comfortable appropriately. Given the fact that Florida, election after election after election, is 1.5 a percentage point, is it right to think of Florida, as so many do, as a Republican-leaning state?
No, I think Florida is truly a purple state. I think that off-year elections are definitely much harder for Democrats than presidential years. But I think that, I think that if this was truly a red state, Donald Trump would not be here week after week and sending surrogates almost on a daily basis, whether it's one of his family members or him or the vice president. I mean, they are here continuously somewhere in the state. And I think that shows that, they're campaigning hard for it and they know they have to.
So give us an idea in the final week of the campaign, what is a day in the life of Ashley Walker, who is also a new mother?
Oh, well, yeah, I try to preserve bath time because that's really the only time. And that's like my little hour window that I'm able to really preserve because I get up in the morning. And at this point in the cycle, it's a lot of work every day. But it's right now I'm just trying to make sure that in all of the 4 our future battleground states that we're putting everything on the field. We're running as much program as possible and, you know, getting in front of as many voters as possible in person, which usually is always a challenge, but this cycle with the pandemic has just created new challenges. And quite frankly, it's something that nobody in the country had done before, at least on the Democratic and progressive side, nobody had done until a couple months ago. And so it just creates new challenges. So I feel like my day is filled with fixing dumpster fires and putting out dumpster fires on a daily basis, but in a good way, just trying to keep program moving and getting, trying to turn out every last vote, whether that be through paid calls, through mail, digital ads, canvassing, just really focused on putting everything we can on the field so that we're helping not just the presidency, but there's a Supreme Court race in Ohio that's going to be significant, in Nevada and Wisconsin. There's several state ledge races that are critically important. And so, you know, in Florida, there's the minimum wage that's on the ballot. And so there's a lot of important issues that are on the ballot that, you know, we need to win.
I'm curious, let's say I'm a young college kid who wants to go into politics, wants to be the next Ashley Walker. What is the advice and what are the sort of skill sets? You mentioned dumpster fire, and I'm thinking you're always a very calm, methodical person. You're not, Democrats are known for hand-wringing and bedwetting and all that. That's not you.
Yeah, no. Although sometimes I am screaming inside, I really kind of keep it internal. But, I always tell young people, I think there's a perception in politics that, you have to know somebody to get in. And, to some degree, that's true. It's a lot easier if you're a donor's kid or your mom knows somebody. But, I didn't know anybody when I got in politics. And I always, my family's not even from Florida and they are by far not politically influential. We're just average, they're just average family. And I think that politics is a unique industry that anybody can get into. And I always tell young people, go volunteer for a campaign, whether it's a state rep race, whether it's a presidential race, a governor's race, go into the office, make yourself indispensable. The campaigns always have way more work than they have people. And when somebody is there and they can, whether it's an hour on the weekends or it's in the evenings, when they see competent people that can make the workload easier, when there's a budget, they will put somebody on payroll. And that's how, every campaign I've ever been on, you always look, there's Stan. He is super competent and smart. He can take X job. Let's get him on payroll so we can utilize him. And so I always just say, and listen, I recognize that not everybody has the luxury to be able to go and volunteer. But that is a way that you can meet people, that you can get in front of people that are hiring and kind of learn the ropes and learn kind of what campaigns are about. I always say campaigns are organized chaos. There's a certain personality that you kind of have to be able to kind of excel in that environment.
What is hyper-organized?
Yeah, well, you got to be hyper-organized, but you have to be okay with last minute changes. If you're one of those people that's a super planner that likes everything a specific way and 2 weeks out what's happening, that's not a campaign. You can plan 2 weeks out and it'll probably change three times in the next 2 weeks. And so you really have to be flexible and be nimble and be willing to kind of roll with the punches and kind of be okay if there is a little chaos and it feels a little bumpy, the ride feels a little bumpy. That's kind of part of the experience and you have to enjoy that type of environment.
And you do a lot more than Democratic politics, but how you grew up in rural Indiana, how did you get involved in doing what you do? How did this happen?
So it's interesting, you know, I grew up in rural Indiana. My mom and dad were both union workers. I grew up in a little small town, and my dad worked at GM. So he was a UAW worker. My mom worked at the post office. So she was a part of the letter carriers union. And in where I grew up, that meant I was a have. I was one of the fortunate kids because we had health care. My parents could afford to buy me school clothes, and we went on one summer vacation every year. We drove to Florida because we couldn't afford to fly. And so I was a kid that was fortunate, and definitely middle class and not very fortunate to by Florida standards. Both of my parents were Democrats. But we didn't talk about politics. My grandfather ran for city council as a Republican and was a staunch Republican. And my brother is a very staunch Republican as well. But when I moved to Florida, I was in graduate school looking for a job, and I needed some money. I needed some money and wanted to get some experience. And somebody in one of my first graduate school classes said they worked for Senator Graham, and they had a paid position. So he got me an interview. I went in, and I still remember Bob Graham's district director saying to me in the interview, "Well, if you're not involved with politics, I can tell you, I promise you, Bob Graham will never embarrass you. You'll never wake up in the morning and see some big controversy on the front page of the paper." And I thought to myself, this must be what they all say. I cannot imagine, because that's just your perception of politics. But it turned out to be true about Bob Graham. Like, he is truly, a very well-respected and honorable man. And, you know, some people would say a little vanilla. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of controversy around issues. But he, you know, that was my introduction into policy. He was quite the state into politics, and he was quite the statesman. And so from there, one thing led to another, and I ended up in campaigns. But, you know, I think the one thing that I think is relevant to all of this cycle is, you know, I do go to Thanksgiving dinner, and my brother is a staunch Republican. My husband is a Republican. You know, I have a lot of friends that are Republican, and while I believe in democratic values and definitely campaigning for this side and have no plan on helping the other side, we do have to find common ground. And I do think, you know, growing up in rural Indiana, where, you know, democratic liberal values were not like the run of they were not the norm, helped kind of set that my viewpoint on how you can work together with people and how there's good people on both sides. And you just have to look past partisan politics to see the value in people.
At home, is your husband watching Fox in one room and your MSNBC in the other? How does that work?
Absolutely not. We do not watch cable news. We would probably be sleeping in separate bedrooms if we did.
You argue and talk politics?
Oh, yeah. And all of our friends laugh because they're like, I have never, especially in this day and age, they're like, I have never seeing two people. You know, my husband is a staunch Amendment 2 advocate. He was ex-military and was an airborne ranger. And so that is something that he feels very, very strongly about. You know, I'm very pro-choice. And so we have very differing opinions on policy items, and sometimes it gets lively. Normally we stop before it gets too crazy. Although I will say a few years ago, it was in 2016. It was the night before our anniversary. So it was, we went out to dinner with friends and, one bottle of wine got a little spicy, two bottles of wine. And let's just say by the end of the night, my husband was sleeping in one bedroom, I was sleeping in the other. And we woke up on our anniversary in separate bedrooms, and we were like, what? And we just, you know, we laugh about it to this day, but we don't let it get to that point anymore. But it definitely has gone there before.
So I want to ask you, because you and Mercury have a very good track record in terms of ballot initiatives. There are nonpartisan races from the Hillsborough Transportation Initiative to the Miami Beach Convention Center, Jackson Memorial Hospital. And in several of those cases, those are ballot initiatives that failed, referendums, and then you came in What is that? I mean, what do you do when you see something like a transportation initiative fail multiple times? How do you approach that?
Well, I think the unique thing about ballot initiatives is, regardless of what the policy is, from a political perspective, they're usually viewed from a lens of one side or the other. You know, tax increase is, you know, viewed as a Democratic thing. You know, they're just, they have a disposition one way or another. And really, these issues are nonpartisan. And I think our firm brings a bipartisan approach, which kind of gives you the nonpartisan, because you have people that think about how Republicans will view this, how Democrats will view something, and you can develop out a plan that captures as many people as possible from both parties, because, you know, statewide amendments in Florida have to pass with 60%, which is a very, very difficult threshold. And so what we have always done is try to take a fresh approach and really understand where, how people view the language initially and meet people where they are. If I remember on the Jackson referendum,
that's the hospital in Miami.
Yeah, Jackson Hospital, they wanted to get a penny tax to be able to expand some of their services in Miami-Dade County. And, you know, it was in an off-year election, so it's really hard, you know, with lower turnout to get something like that passed. And, you know, our polling showed that even though it was less than $10 a household, that when you reminded voters that it was indeed a tax increase, that you lost everyone, even people that agreed that the services were needed. And every step of the way, even people on our consultant team kept saying, well, we need to just talk about it. It's only, you know, it's no more than a cup of coffee a month, you know, like we need to remind people it's no more than parking at the beach. It's no, and it's like, and you have to remind people, you have to focus on what people are getting for this vote, not what it's going to cost them. And it's just a hard, you know, people are inclined to try to answer people's questions. And when you're trying to pass a ballot initiative, you're trying to sell a story that you want to sell, not necessarily respond to all the questions that you're getting about it. And so that's a challenge. And I think that our firm brings a unique approach. Both the transportation initiative in Hillsborough County that you mentioned and the Miami Beach Convention Center were efforts that had been tried by different consultant teams multiple times before we came in. And we just have offered a bipartisan, fresh approach, went into it with no bias on how to get there, but did the research, figured out a plan, and developed a plan accordingly, and we were successful.
Finish up with politics. I know you got to go and win an election, but how is Ron DeSantis positioned for re-election? You're going to hopefully get some time in Tahiti before you get to the next race, but next governor's race, how do you see it at this stage?
You know, I think that the coronavirus has been a, you know, it's been a challenge for any of our elected leaders at that level. I mean, I think that Donald Trump's, you know, re-election chances has definitely been affected by coronavirus. And that's been one of his most negative messages that he's had. And I'm not even getting into the economy. I just mean just his handling of the health pandemic from a health perspective. And I think that you know, if you would have asked folks, I bet you Ron DeSantis's numbers were a lot better in February than they are today. Although, you know, we went through a bumpy patch over the summer. I think it's kind of shifting back to a better place for him. But I think that we have a long way to go in this pandemic. And so, you know, I think he's got to kind of think through how he handles this pandemic and make sure that he doesn't get too partisan. Because I think that next Tuesday's results are going to impact the mood of not just the state, but the country, and how people view this pandemic and what they're going to say about how it should be handled. And so, you know, it's hard to say. It's a long time out from election. But, you know, I think that his position pre-pandemic and his position today are two totally kind of different situations. And I think he's a lot more vulnerable now than he was then.
I wonder if he's better off. I think he's probably better off if Trump loses. He's no longer super glued to a super divisive president.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I think that's a fair assumption, although I think that he was pretty super glued to Donald Trump when he won in 18. I mean, everybody said that he was so far conservative that there was no way he could kind of make it through an election, through a general election. Everybody was like, Adam Putnam was the guy, was conventional wisdom. But, you know, I will say the first couple years in office, like he did a pretty good job in terms of he was not this hardcore conservative that everyone thought he was going to be. Although I would say this pandemic, he's definitely hit a hard turn right in how he is choosing to kind of handle that. And I think that that's come from pressure from the White House.
Yeah. Ashley, go out and win the race.
Thank you, Adam. It's great to talk to you. Have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
From stpcatalyst.com.